You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. Our parents often try to instill in us a love for the things that they love. While I was growing up, my dad was really into cars. He drove sprint cars every weekend at Sydney Speedway. And as a person who was not yet allowed to exist without a supervising adult, I was required to tag along. I hated it. It was dusty, which triggered my asthma. It was very loud, which made me very anxious. And he always smelled so strongly of petrol. But as much as I hated the dust and the smell at the time, now it all reminds me of him.
There's this running theme in my Big Fat Greek Wedding, where the dad says that everything can be fixed by Windex. My grandma had something similar. There's this Chinese ointment called white flower oil. It's kind of like tiger balm, and it comes in this really small glass bottle. I didn't grow up in the same country as my grandma, but the smell of this ointment always reminds me of her. For Gina Monaco, the smell of petrol reminds her of her father.
He used to come back from working at the Coltex station smelling like it. But I actually quite like solvents and strong smells, even nail polish remover and those kind of smells that kind of just go ding in your brain and you know that you've just killed some brain cells smelling that. But something's really sexy about the smell of petrol. He worked in a Caltex station on the weekends, and throughout the week he worked for General Motors Holden. So my love of cars started at a very early age due to him.
What sort of car or cars did your parents drive when you were a kid?
Well, Mum didn't drive until my father passed after I was nine. My father had several cars. I remember one in particular. We had it for many years, even after he passed. It was an old Holden HT station wagon. It was like my plaything. It was my cubby house. It didn't go anywhere for years. It was the most beautiful, deepest blue, navy blue, and it had a white roof. And the seats would come down, and I'd put cushions at the back and just read at the back, or even pretend I was going on picnics and drive the car, which didn't drive, of course. But every now and again, I was allowed to start the ignition at a very early age and rev it up, and that, you know, was very pants-wetting.
Gina grew up in a Sydney suburb called Monterey, and during the holidays, she'd often go to her cousin's farm in Dural, in Sydney's northwest.
So for every holidays, we were surrounded by motorbikes, you know, Peewee 80s and little motorbikes. And I remember being in my cousin's, my uncle's car, and he said, you know, I could teach you how to drive. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And I think I would have been about 10 or 11 at the time. And he was probably about 13 or 14. And I went, okay, because, you know, it was out in the open. And I could drive for the first time, and it was like a hoot, and it was like, this is really easy.
When did you start planning the first car that you wanted to buy?
I think I was about 12 that I wanted to buy a car. I was, about 12, and I thought, I want to buy a car, and I wanted to buy something big, and I wanted to be intrusive, and I wanted to just come down the road. I wanted to get to places, and I wanted to see what this machine would do, and, you know, and how it all worked, you know. You lift up a bonnet and it was like, wow, what does this one do? What does this do?
Gina's parents were from Sicily, and on Saturdays they made her go to Italian school.
So we were forced to go to Italian school on a Saturday, and I think it went for half a day, and it was excruciating. I had no idea what they wanted us to do. Even though it was Italian, it was a lot of written work, and there was a lot of native speakers there that were really quite good at what they were doing, and I just wasn't into it. I think I lasted about 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
And then I found out that on the train line where Rockdale was, there was only 2 or 3 stations to Hurstville, and there was a place that was very dark and people were allowed to smoke in there, and it was where people played games. So I'd save my money up. I think I'd probably had about $5, and I'd jump on the train. I'd get my name marked off, and I'd say that I was going to the bathroom, and then I'd go to Hurstville and play games in the dark with a lot of weird people playing these games, you know, like there was Pac-Man and Galaga and Gyros and all these weird games, and I became pretty obsessed with pinball machines and things like that at an early age as well.
When her mum found out about this, Gina came up with a better reason for getting out of Italian school. She got her first job as an assistant in a hair salon.
I was 13 when I actually got my first job.
Do you remember how much you were paid for that
$2.50 an hour. And the things that they would make us do, we'd have to clean the corners with a toothbrush. By the time I was probably about 14 or 15, my wage had increased and I was getting tips at work. And I had $800, and that's how much the car was.
What is the car that you bought for $800?
It was a HT station wagon. It was maroon. And when I found out it was maroon, I thought, that's the car I want.
A Holden HT station wagon. That was the same car that Gina grew up playing in, even after her father passed away when she was 9. But she needed someone to drive her, to pick up her car. That person was her neighbour from across the road, Greg.
He was this guy who also had a station wagon, and it was a panel van, and it was covered in blue fur. Probably shouldn't be speaking to him, but I did. I was pretty obsessed with his car. And I just went over, and I remember being in my pyjamas and saying, I've got this car and we've got to go and pick it up.
So the two of them pull up in Greg's panel van to meet the seller.
Who was like this muscle man. I still remember him quite well. And I remember getting out and going, no, it's for me. And he was like, looking at Greg, and Greg's like, yep, that's her car.
But there was a problem with Gina buying the car. She was too young to drive it.
And it sat in my garage for a mighty long time, and I would start it up and I would move it back and forward and back and forward. And mind you, we lived in a very tight, very narrow garage, you know, to get to the car. So I would go, you know, like side to side like a fish going, oh, shit. Hope I don't bang it. In and out, in and out. Slowly, I'd go out and in and out and in. I became really good at reverse parking. Anyone that knows me goes, oh, my God, you just get in there. And it's like, yep, that's training. In and out.
So, as in, are you going in a straight line?
Yes, I was going in a straight line, but for someone that could not see above the steering wheel or behind me, it was extremely hard.
How were you actually physically driving the car?
Phone books. I could just reach the pedal. It was extremely hard to see out. So occasionally I would drive and I'd be driving looking through the steering wheel. And the thing was too, sometimes it would run out of petrol. So Greg would take it and go and get petrol for me. Yes, he was good. Greg was good.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I like sitting in traffic. I often look inside people's cars, watching them pick their noses or eat or they're on the phone or you look around and you've almost invaded their space, you know, and they might be doing something that's quite personal and you catch their gaze and they'll catch yours and you give them a quick little smile. Or sometimes I even put up my little toys that I've got around me, you know, I've got little flamingos and you know, especially to kids and things. And yeah, it's just a nice little interaction going to work or coming home. It breaks your day up and people think you're nuts, but that's all right. Doesn't matter, you're off by the time they can actually make an assumption of who you are or what you're doing, and it's quite cute.
So sure that one day we'd be fighting.
That story was produced by Alison Chan. Ryan Pemberton was the supervising producer. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. The closest things I have to children are my indoor plants. None of them are doing very well. In our next story, Renee deals with the challenges of being an actual mother to actual children.
This is the sound of motherhood. This is life passing you by when you're at home with a new baby. The author, Kathy Letty, called it social Siberia, and that was just her first child. I'm on maternity leave with my third child. My eldest has not yet started school. My middle child is only three. I love my children, and I have chosen this life, but I need to get out a little more. Have you ever heard of baby-friendly aerobics? It's pretty much come as you are. Turn up late if you want. Just enough exercise to break into a sweat while your baby sleeps or stares at itself in ceiling-to-floor mirrors. At my local leisure centre, the $8 ticket also included a free coffee at the end, because they know something about postnatal mental health. It's fantastic, unless you have more than one child and the creche doesn't open that early in the morning. What else is there? Let's see. Well, I love movies. Mums and Bubs Cinema. What a brilliant idea. But wait, none of those movies are kid movies. Oh, right. Another one for first-time mums. I know. I'll join another mother's group. I remember that camaraderie, the unlikely but important friendships, those weeks when all our babies turned one around the same time. It was so nice. Hello, is this the maternal health centre? Yeah, that's right, it's my third baby. No, I'm not having any lactation issues. No issues with sleep or settling either. I just wanted to... Yep, I see. Okay, thanks anyway. No room for us there either. So where are mamas with their tiny babies and their other little humans supposed to go? Where will we be welcomed? As it turns out, I'm not the only one struggling to find a welcoming place for me and my little tribe.
My name is Sarah Lestrange, and I'm married to Angus, Gus, and I have two little kids, Hamish, who's 5 and almost 6, actually, and Juliet, who's 3.
Sarah works in radio broadcasting. She's been talking books and arts on the air for 12 years, although she didn't plan on it.
If I'm going to be honest, wasn't by design. It was just where I was asked to be, mm-hmm. and so I said yes. And it's been great because how great is arts broadcasting? The other best part is that I get to shape a show each week around ideas in books and literature. And so there's a lot of autonomy.
Like so many women, Sarah found her first months as a new mother really challenging. Suddenly she couldn't plan or do any of the things she enjoyed. And above all, she was very isolated.
I felt like it was a real loss. And so it took me a while to get used to it. So when my son Hamish was a baby, you know, right from the start, I read to him. And before I was a parent, being a parent was not in my imagination. Mm. I might have had lofty ideas that, of course, I'll expose my children to music and we'll do creative things together. But honestly, I didn't think much about children at all.
Like all book lovers, Sarah enjoyed reading with her tiny child. On the other hand, going to the library to get the books was a little harder to enjoy. Local libraries are a good friend to new mothers. They are free, they are generally warm and welcoming, and they're full of books. Rhyme Time is the song session for babies and their carers, and Story Time is another one for preschoolers who can sit still. They are wonderful sessions. They're so inclusive, and the library instructors don't seem to mind the chaos at all. But they bring a sudden and abrupt end to your sense of calm and solitude in the library. Plus, they don't always go to plan.
With Hamish, I certainly took him quite religiously. Perhaps that's one of the things you go, oh, yeah, of course I'll go to story time and rhyme time with my children, which worked for a bit until he would run off and, you know, they're meant to sit down and pay attention and not make noise, and then you're saying, Hamish, sit down. It's not a relaxing experience. The 5-year-old actually is fine. Taking him is really nice. Taking the 3-year-old is not, because she wants to run around. There are many openings at the library, so you're worried that they're going to run off. I usually choose books really quickly. So it's, yeah, going to the library, unfortunately, is not part of that centering experience.
Yep, been there. The Rhyme Time sessions go for exactly 30 minutes, which is about how long it takes to turn up, find a beanbag for the toddler, park the newborn pram as near as possible, stand up and sing Twinkle Twinkle together, then notice the toddler needs a major nappy change, like now, then take them both off to the change rooms for the whole ordeal and get back just in time to sing Time to Go, Everyone. If you're happy and you know it, wave goodbye. And then try not to cry. Dumpty had a great ball. Oh dear. All the king's horses and all the... At home, I find an article called How Cultural Organisations Can Work in Partnerships with Families, and I get a little shiver of excitement. It's about a place called the Children's Gallery at the Melbourne Museum. It says, babies and children learn best when they have responsive and caring parents and are in a stimulating environment where they can learn and play. Well, my house looks like a tornado went through it. I don't think it counts as a stimulating environment. I wonder if this children's gallery might be the place I've been looking for. I contact the gallery to ask some questions and find they are happy to tell me more.
So my name's Alex Price. I'm currently the Outreach Program Manager at Museums Victoria. One of the things that I was really keen to do whilst on the project, and I think the designers were as well, as to create moments where parents and children can learn together. So I think it provides an opportunity for families to be welcomed, to experience the museum in a different way through the eyes of their children, to play together, to learn together.
This is too good to be true. Okay, so there are nappy change facilities and a coffee machine in the gallery. Amazing. But I wonder, will the children really be entertained?
Set up to give children a space where they can learn through play. So we see it as a space where families and education groups, of early childhood education groups, can come and play in a relaxed environment. Was to look at the experiences the designers were thinking about and just making sure that there were enough things for children of all the different ages to do. One of the challenges, I think, in a museum is that often we have objects that can't be touched. And that's certainly a challenge when you're thinking about the developmental needs of young children. They do like to touch things and to be, you know, to really have a hands-on experience. And so I think the Children's Gallery does provide an opportunity to be introduced to the idea of collections.
And I can't help but ask, is it worth it? Is this really any better than pulling out the finger paints at home?
I mean, there's not really many places that you can go and experience in one day. You know, being a paleontologist, digging up a Mamenchisaurus in the dinosaur dig outside, experience listening to Aboriginal night sky stories whilst watching animations that have been created by Indigenous staff members and artists. It's about opportunities that you can't really get, and I suppose it's that multimodal learning again. It's that idea of learning through the different senses. It's about experiencing, listening to the narration of an Aboriginal elder telling a story whilst watching an animation of Tiddalik the Thirsty Frog. It's about listening to lullabies from different cultures whilst lying in a lullaby nook. So it's the diversity of the experience.
Okay, I'm convinced. I am a super mama, and I'm going to take all three of my little darlings to the Pauline Gandel Children's Gallery for the whole day. Let's see. All I need to pack is the nappies, 3 water bottles, extra clothes for everyone, snacks, lunch, afternoon tea, a snack after afternoon tea, the double pram, the baby's blankets, the baby's... It's a beautiful place, full of colour and wonder and meaningful play. Loads of parents are taking loads of photos because it's so pretty. And also, their children are staying in one spot. Whereas mine are going in 3 different directions, and I only have 2 arms and 2 eyes. Pretty soon, all 4 of us are heading to the toilets, and as soon as we get back, we have to return because the baby needs a nappy change. And when we get back from that, everyone wants a snack. The eldest wants to climb. Where is she? And the next eldest wants to wait in line for the camouflage disco. What even is that? The baby wants to taste all of the children's shoes piled at the entrance. Put that down. And all of these children need a piece of me now. This is a very, very stimulating environment. By the time we get back in the car to go home, I feel like I'm going to collapse. It's been 3 hours in there, and every minute required every atom of me. And my children just ran from one thing to another. Did they get anything meaningful out of it? Oh, I don't think I'm ever going back there again. But in the next few days, I see some lovely things happening at home. My son remembers an Aboriginal story he heard at the gallery and recalls it in incredible detail.
He drank all the water, then he turned into a big water lily, and then the tree has gone black because of the lack of water, and then there was not even a single drop left.
Tiddalik began to drink from the water hole. and all the water was gone. Then he drank from the creeks.
And then he sets up a puzzle gallery at home and gives his sisters a guided tour. My daughter finds a book about the museum and says it reminds her of being there
when
with me.
I see work of art, something happens in my heart. The words are also rhyming. Aren't they, Mama? Its rhythm exists in all I see. The museum lives inside of me.
Okay, so I'm quietly pleased with myself. I have helped to fill up their little cups. But what about my cup? Being their adventurous mama takes so much out of me. I like it. In fact, I love it, but it drains me. To be their loving, creative mama and to be myself, I have to find the things that fill up my cup too. Luckily, I don't have to look very far. A quiet cup of slowly brewed chai, a few moments reading my book, taking time to write about my day, going for a walk around the block just before the sun goes down. I think we're all going to be okay.
Renee Mbezi produced that story. Jordan Fennell was the supervising producer. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Anae Gallo. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best community coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN community coordinator is Erin Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find all of our episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so grab your mum's phone and subscribe.